Welcome to another edition of the Romance Program. I'm volunteer Jeannie Yost for Sun Sounds. I've got one story coming up this hour from True Confessions magazine called I Shot My Little Girl's Man. Here's the story. Maybe back when I was 17, I wasn't ready to have a baby. For certain, now that I am 32, I don't feel up to the challenge of mothering a teenager. At the age of 15, my daughter Angelina is already so beautiful that strangers and friends alike describe her as stunning. With her waist-length straight hair, her light-colored eyes, and her slender, long-legged body, she has the looks of a movie star or a supermodel. It surprises people, once they get to know her, how modest Angelina actually is. She's humble, even insecure in some ways. She doesn't see herself as anything special. After all, she's always had that black hair, those silver-gray eyes, and that tall little body. Oh, lithe body, that is. Just as she has always had a gentle, generous, thoughtful, sweet-natured personality. I'll bet I know what you're thinking. And you're right, I do idolize my daughter, and I am quite prejudiced in her favor. But it's not only me. Angelina has plenty of friends at school and is well-loved among the members of our church congregation, and I'm convinced that it was her beauty, as well as her humility and her insecurities, which attracted Robert Sebastopol to her, too. I remember the first time I heard Robert Sebastopol's name. It was at the beginning of this school year, her sophomore year, her first year of senior high school. She came home from the first Friday night football game of the fall, sighing loudly and dramatically in the way that teenage girls tend to do whenever they've fallen head over heels in lust. "So how did the game go?" I asked. "Game?" she echoed in that slightly breathy voice of a teenager who's pretending to listen to her parent, but is in reality completely preoccupied with something or someone else. "Yes," I replied, "the game. You know, two opposing teams. One team kicks and throws and runs and carries this oblong pigskin-covered ball down a long field, while the other team tries to tackle their opponent and steal the ball before it gets taken into the end zone for a touchdown. It's called football." Angelina blushed. "Oh, the game. It was okay. We won, but only because of Robert Sebastopol's wonderful moves. He's better than the whole rest of the team put together." She pulled off her sweater and headed for her bedroom. I followed her, eager to hear more about this boy named Robert Sebastopol, who had obviously captured my little girl's interest. "Who is this boy, Robert?" I tried to sound casual, but I'm sure I gave myself away. Angelina pulled her turtleneck over her head and grinned at me. "Oh, Mom, Robert is simply the greatest. He's a senior. He's a quarterback and the star of our school's football team." Her gaze turned all dreamy then, and in a reverential voice, she exclaimed, "He's all that." "All that what?" I asked. "Oh, Mom," she said with a giggle, and I could tell from the giggle and from the look she gave me that I had missed something somewhere in the translation from teenage English to adult English. At first, I assumed that what Angelina felt for Robert was an innocent, youthful hero worship sort of crush. I never imagined that my shy, bookish 15-year-old daughter, whose social life mainly consisted of participating in our church's youth group and hanging out at each other's houses with their friends in the school choir and honor society, would strike up a friendship with the 17-year-old star player of the high school football team. Much less that he might return any of her feelings for him. But within only a couple of weeks, he had asked her out. I have to admit that I was really impressed when I first met Robert. He came in our apartment to pick Angelina up for a Saturday night date of dinner and a movie. Although he was at least 6 feet tall and broad-shouldered, his appearance was made less imposing by his boyish hairstyle and a face full of freckles. He was dressed like a gentleman, too, in corduroy slacks, an Oxford shirt, a tie, a jacket, and khaki pants. He was every inch the kind of young man I dreamed of for my daughter, at least if what I saw was any indication. His eyes lit up with obvious appreciation the moment Angelina walked into the room, and suddenly I understood exactly what he saw in her. They looked well matched physically. Angelina was nearly as tall as Robert, but while he was sturdy and muscular, she was thin and delicate, and while his coloring was light and rosy-cheeked, hers was dark and dusky. They made an extremely attractive couple. If their personalities and their interests complemented one another as well, and they complemented each other, then they were well suited to each other indeed. "You look fantastic in that dress," he said as he approached her. His two hands outstretched. "It makes your eyes look extra sparkly." She took his two hands into both of hers, and her cheeks reddened slightly as she softly replied, "Thank you." I had helped her pick out the dress earlier that evening, exactly because it brought out the beauty of her eyes. She glanced at me, and I could tell that she was also thinking about all of the careful preparations I had helped her make for this, her first date with Robert. She had wanted to impress him, and if the look in his eyes as he gazed at her was any indication, she had done just that. She smiled at me, and I smiled back. Robert promised to have her back by 11 o'clock, her curfew, and I felt that as I watched her walk out the door and down the sidewalk with him, And I felt that I was leaving my little girl in good hands as I watched her walk out the door and down the sidewalk with him. He led her to his car, probably his parents' car. I corrected myself as I noted that it was a bright-colored sports car, way too expensive a machine for a high school boy to call his own, and he opened the passenger side door for her to get in. I nodded to myself, pleased. From appearance to behavior, Robert was the proper young gentleman in every way. I could be happy that Angelina was with him. Their first date must have been quite a success, because after that, they began going out regularly. Angelina stood in the bleachers and cheered Robert on at every one of his Friday night football games. Every Saturday, they went out together, sometimes during the day, to play miniature golf or to go for a hike and a picnic in the mountains nearby, or just to hang out at the mall, and sometimes at night to go to the movies or to attend a party. With Robert's influence, my quiet, introspective daughter was transformed, and I didn't think that that was necessarily a bad thing. He drew her out of her shell of shyness and introduced her to people other than the Honor Society students and school choir members who had always been her closest friends. He opened up her life to a wider range of good people and fun activities than she had ever exposed to before. Robert continued to act charming whenever he saw me, too. He respectfully called me Mrs. Nider rather than Crystal, as some of Angelina's friends did. Some of Angelina's friends' parents had never taught their children to show respect to grown-ups by not calling them by their first names. Robert had clearly been raised with nice manners. He also stood whenever I entered a room and even brought me a bouquet of flowers one time and a bottle of non-alcoholic wine once, too. What more could a mother want for her daughter? In Robert, she had what I had never been lucky enough to have, a good man. Angelina's dad had been a high school sophomore, the same as I was, when we had started dating. We were a couple of crazy, immature kids, starved for attention, or affection, that is, any way we could get it, and we found it in each other's arms. As soon as I found out that I was pregnant, though, he bolted. My parents weren't any more supportive than he was. My dad packed one suitcase for me, put in it outside on the front lawn, and locked me out of my childhood home. I moved from friend's house to friend's house for the next few months until I found a job as an elderly woman's home companion, which paid room, board, and a tiny salary. I think old Mrs. Jacobson did as much good for me as I did for her. I was with her when Angelina was born and stayed with her until after I graduated from high school. I haven't had a man in my life since then because for the last 15 years, Angelina had been my number one priority. So I can tell you how much it meant to me to finally see my baby being treated like the princess she was by a young man who seemed like a real Prince Charming. As November turned into December, it seemed that Angelina was spending more and more of her free time talking on the telephone with Robert. He would call at 2:45 on the dot every weekday afternoon, and they would do their homework together while they gossiped on the phone. Can you explain to me again about that geometry problem? I might overhear Angelina asking. She usually got straight A's on her report card, but out of all of her subjects, math was the one she struggled with the most. They'd hang up in time for a 6 o'clock dinner, but would be back on the phone again from 7 to 10 at night. At first, I didn't think anything of the marathon telephone conversations, except, thank the good Lord this is local and not long distance. I mean, at the age of 32, I wasn't so far beyond the age of boy-girl relationships and telephone mania that I couldn't sympathize with my wonderful daughter. One day, though, I was walking past Angelina's bedroom carrying a hamper full of dirty clothes from the bathroom to the clothes washer in our back hall closet when I heard Angelina sounding agitated. "I'm only 5 minutes late," I heard her say. "All I did was stop by the music room to pick up a new piece of sheet music I have to learn for the winter choral concert." There was silence for about 30 seconds, I guess, while Robert replied to her, and then she cried. "Well, you don't have to make a federal case out of it. It's just a dumb Christmas song." There was silence again, maybe for a minute this time, and then Angelina's voice softened as she said, Yeah, I know you just get a little overprotective sometimes because you love me. Hey, I love you too, baby." Angelina might have been easily reassured by Robert's sweet talk, but I was not. I began to worry that they were getting too serious. When I realized that Robert had scolded her for being 5 minutes late getting home, I felt that he was acting extremely overprotective, as Angelina herself had said. At the tender age of 15, my baby girl did not need any boy being overprotective of her or jealous of how she spent her free time. She needed to have a chance to grow up and discover herself and learn to do things on her own, not to constantly be under someone's control, whether it was Robert's or mine. I decided that I wouldn't even mention overhearing that part of her telephone call. I didn't want my daughter to think she had an eavesdropping, spying mother. I wanted her to trust me, and if I truly believed that she needed to be given time to grow up and learn to do things on her own, then I also needed to learn to trust Angelina and to trust that she would do whatever was necessary in order for her to take care of herself. It was hard, though, to stand idly by and watch as I saw the changes that were taking place in Angelina. Only 1 week before the winter choral concert, she dropped out of the school choir. I was stunned. She'd always loved singing and had belonged to a church choir, a school choir, or both, since she was 5 years old. When I asked her about it, she simply replied, "I'm all sung out. I'm tired of singing." Our church sponsored a hayride, followed by a party with hot chocolate and a Christmas carol sing-along for the junior-senior high school youth group every year, and Angelina had attended it every year since she'd been in the seventh grade. This time, though, she decided to skip it. "The weather's too cold for a hayride this year," she argued, and gave a dramatic mock shiver. "Well, you could still attend the party after the hayride. That'll be held indoors, and there'll be lots of sweet, rich-tasting hot chocolate to drink and Christmas carols to sing." "Mom," she whined, "don't push it, please. It's like I told you before when you asked about the winter choral concert. I'm all sung out. I'm just not in the mood." So it was goodbye to the school choir, to the church youth group, and then to her honor society friends. When her dearest, oldest friend Ursula called, Angelina refused to speak with her. "Tell her I'm busy," Angelina instructed me. I covered the mouthpiece of the phone with one hand and planted my other hand on my hip. "And what are you so busy with that you don't have time to talk to your best friend?" I demanded. "Robert and I are going out later tonight. Don't tell Ursula, though. She doesn't really date, and I don't want to have to deal with her jealousy about the great relationship I have with Robert. It's too pathetic. I can't deal with it." Angelina pranced back into her bedroom and closed the door, preparing to set her hair on hot curlers and do her makeup, no doubt. I spoke into the mouthpiece again. "Ursula, I'm really sorry, but Angelina can't come to the phone just now. Can I take a message?" "Yeah, Crystal," she said. "You can tell Angelina to call me if she even finds the time." Ursula hung up. When Robert came for Angelina later that evening, she appeared in a pencil-thin khaki skirt, a silver-gray knit turtleneck, and a dark gray cardigan. "I thought she looked lovely, but right there in front of me," Robert said, "I thought I told you that you look better in jeans than in skirts. And put on something with some color. You look like one of those washed-out daguerreotype photographs from the old days. You know how I love you in that hot pink sweater set you bought last month." My jaw dropped in amazement that Angelina would allow Robert to even speak to her in such a bossy, critical way, and my mouth continued to hang open as she turned on her heels, went into her room, and came back out, not 5 minutes later, wearing the exact outfit Robert had demanded that she put on. It was time at last for Angelina and me to have a talk, I decided. The next day was a Sunday. She didn't want to go to the church service with me, and I didn't push it. In direct influence of me, Robert had not brought her home until nearly 1 in the morning, 2 hours past her curfew. At the time, I was seething with anger at him, but for once, he had only dropped Angelina off at a curbside and waited in the car until she'd gotten inside our apartment. I didn't want to take out my anger on Angelina, though, because seeing how Robert had begun to control her, I was sure that the curfew breaking was his idea, not hers. And the next morning, as I prepared to go to church, my heart constricted with sympathy as my little girl begged me, "Please, Mommy, can I stay home from church just this once? I'm still so sleepy." "All right," I nodded. "You can skip church today on one condition. I want you to stay here and wait for me. After church lets out, I'll come back home and I'll pick you up and we'll go out for Sunday dinner. I feel like you and I really need to have some quiet time together, okay?" When she nodded her agreement and smiled her sweet, sleepy baby smile at me, I felt like my heart would surely melt into a puddle on the floor. Right then and there, Angelina was all the family I'd had since I was 17, and I loved her passionately, heart and soul. At church, I would pray for her and for our special relationship as mother and daughter. When I got back home after church, Angelina was ready and waiting for me, dressed in an olive green, gray, and white striped dress, hose, and black patent leather pumps. Her hair was pulled back from her face with a single barrette at the crown of her head, and her makeup was simple and conservative. She looked like the Angelina I'd always known and loved, not at all the way she'd looked the past few weeks, wearing cargo pants or poor boy style jeans and tight shirts or sweaters with black red lipstick plastered on her mouth and blue or black or green nail polish lacquered on her fingers, and with her hair curled and frizzed and styled exactly the way Robert said he liked it. I gazed at her longingly, wishing that she truly was her old self again, but also knowing with a sinking sort of resignation that this was a one-time thing that she was thoughtfully doing for my benefit. My voice nearly choked in my throat. "You look beautiful," I whispered. "I'm your daughter," she simply replied, and somehow I could tell that she meant those words both as a compliment of my own appearance and as a tender acknowledgement of our mother-daughter relationship. Tears filled my eyes, but didn't spill over. "What do you say we go to the old farm for a Sunday dinner?" I suggested, my voice still husky with emotion. The old farm was a longtime favorite of ours, a place where we could get good old-fashioned southern food, just like my mama used to cook. 30 minutes later, we had gone through the buffet line at the old farm and were sitting across a table from each other with plates piled high with cornbread, black-eyed peas, collard greens, fried chicken, squash casserole, and ambrosia. Well, Angelina was chewing on a mouthful of squash casserole, I told her, "Sweetheart, we need to have a talk about you and Robert. I'm concerned about the two of you." She swallowed. "Don't be. We're okay." "You've changed so much since the two of you began dating. You've dropped out of choir and the youth group at church. And at least from what I can see, it looks like you've abandoned all of your old friends, too. I can't help worrying. You've changed so much, I repeated. I've wanted to change. For him or for you, I demanded, because I hope you know no boy is worth making yourself over for. If you want to make yourself over, that's fine, but just be sure that it's what you want. If Robert really loves you, he'll love you for who you are, not for who he wants you to become. I guess what I'm saying is, Angelina, you need to stay true to yourself, because if you don't have yourself, you don't have anything. Angelina smiled softly and patted my hand reassuringly. I know that, Mom. You've taught me well. Now, please trust me when I tell you that I'm happy with the new me and I'm ecstatic to be with Robert. I studied her face. Something didn't seem quite right, but I couldn't figure out what it was. She was smiling and saying all the right words, but it all seemed so mechanical or maybe rehearsed, as if she already knew that I had certain doubts about her relationship with Robert, so she had anticipated what she would say to me if I talked to her about it. Or perhaps one of her friends or teachers had already talked to her about it, and she'd already dismissed their concerns by giving them this same speech. Robert is perfect, she insisted, her voice sounding overly bright. He's handsome. He's the star player on our school's football team. He makes good grades. He's rich, and every girl in school wants him, but I'm the one who has him. I would have to be a very stupid, ungrateful girl not to want Robert for my boyfriend, she concluded. That's it, I suddenly thought. Like a bolt of lightning, it hit me. Angelina was staying with Robert because of her weak self-image and because of peer pressure. She must believe that being his girlfriend made her special, that it raised her image in her friends' eyes, and that people would wonder what was wrong with her rather than what was wrong with Robert, if she broke up with him. The rest of the world saw a guy who seemed wonderful on the outside. What was devastating to Angelina was that this Mr. Wonderful was actually critical and domineering in private. I clenched her hand in mine. You don't have to stay with him if you don't want to, Angie. I'll still respect you. All of your old friends will still respect you. You won't be alone or without support if you break up with Robert. Mom, she yanked her hand away. How dare you? How dare you try to break us up? And you say you respect me? Well, you couldn't respect me that much if you think you know what's good for me better than I know what's good for myself. Robert is good for me. I am staying with Robert, and you can't stop me. She stood, almost knocking over her chair. I'm walking home. Please, finish your lunch. Take your time. I want to be alone. I was speechless. Where had I gone wrong? Maybe I shouldn't have spoken to her at all. As Angelina walked away, I wondered with a heavy heart if I'd lost my little girl forever. Fall semester ended for Angelina just a few days before Christmas. The Sebastopoulos, that's her last name, invited her to spend the holidays plus a couple of extra days with them at their family ski lodge in Vermont. Where's the harm in that? I thought. Granted, I didn't like the way Robert had spoken to Angelina on a couple of occasions, and he caused her to break curfew once, but she continued to be crazy about him, and I'd seen for myself that he had some good qualities, too. Besides, Robert's parents would be chaperoning the ski vacation, and this was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for Angelina. She and I weren't poor, but we sure weren't rich like the Sebastopols either. So I consented to the trip. It was going to be a lonely Christmas for me, but I prayed that it would be a truly happy holiday for my daughter. She deserved the best. 3 days after Christmas, I was taking a long soak in a bubble bath, the kind of luxury I don't often have the time to indulge in, when I heard a key in the lock of our front door. Angelina was home. I wrapped a big, fluffy, terry cloth robe about myself and ran into the living room. "Angie!" I cried and moved to fling my arms around her in a bear hug. But then I stopped short. Her left arm was in a cast. "What happened?" I pointed to the cast. She shrugged. "Typical ski vacation accident," she casually replied. "I broke my wrist. I'll be back to normal in a few weeks, though." An older gentleman who I realized must be the Sebastopol's limousine driver stepped through the doorway to our apartment then, loaded down with the luggage Angelina had packed for the trip to Vermont, plus several more bags. "Where shall I deposit these bags for you, miss?" Angelina waved her good hand. "Oh, anywhere is fine. I'll take care of it later. Thank you, Mark." "As you wish, miss," Mark had said, after he placed all the bags in a pile in the middle of our living room floor. He bobbed a brief bow to Angelina and told her, "Good day to you, Miss Angelina," and left. Staring at all of Angelina's new luggage mixed in with her couple of old bags, and then staring at the cast on her arm and wondering exactly what kind of accident it was which had caused her to break her wrist, all I could think of to say was, "What in the world?" Luckily, she didn't take my question as a criticism. She ignored her cast-encased left arm as best she could and moved toward all her new bags. These are real high-class pieces of luggage, not a knockoff, she proudly announced as she swept her good hand over the beautiful leather and tapestry luggage. "Teresa, that's Robert's mom. Says that first impressions count and that a lady's luggage is the first thing anyone notices about her." This set was one of Teresa's Christmas gifts to me. "One of Teresa's Christmas gifts to you?" I echoed. "Do you mean to say that she gave you more than that?" "Oh, Mom," Angelina giggled, and she almost sounded like her old self again. "They are wealthy people and very generous." She spent much of the rest of that afternoon showing me her new ski togs, new hand-knit designer sweaters, new portable CD player, new books, and even new lingerie. This was another of Teresa's Christmas gifts, which came with another piece of Teresa's wisdom. Last impressions count, too, and even if you're the only one who knows what you're wearing under your clothes, it's still important that you feel good about yourself from the skin out. I thought I had seen everything when Angelina announced, "There's one more thing." Gingerly, she lifted the arm with a cast, and there on the ring finger of her left hand, partially hidden by the cotton padding and bandage and plaster of Paris, was a tastefully small but clearly high-quality ruby and diamond ring. "What is this?" I gasped. "It's a gift from Robert. After I broke my wrist the first day we were there, he felt so sorry for me that he gave me one of my Christmas gifts to me early. It's a promise ring. We're not engaged or anything, but it does mean that we're a serious couple. A lump formed in my throat, not because I was feeling sentimental, but because I suddenly felt so scared I wanted to cry. I couldn't afford to alienate my daughter now. I knew not if I wanted her to trust me enough so that I could continue to keep an eye on her, especially since it was starting to seem like she might not get out of this relationship anytime soon. So I bit back the words I wanted to say and said instead, "It's a lovely ring, sweetheart." A couple of weeks later, Angelina had another accident. I was reading a romance novel in my bedroom one Saturday night when I couldn't help but hear that Angelina and Robert's voices were both raised in what seemed to be an argument. For once, they had decided to stay at our apartment to watch rented movie videos and eat popcorn. Maybe they were debating a point in the movie that they were watching, I hoped. The argument continued. I heard the unmistakable sound of Angelina crying out in pain. I ran into the living room and saw my daughter splayed out across the couch, her body in an unnatural position. Her left arm, still in its cast, looked okay, but her face was pinched as if she were in pain and about to cry, and she was placing all of her body weight on her right upper body while she let her right leg dangle over the side of the couch. "What happened here?" I exclaimed. I looked straight at Robert when I asked the question. "I think I sprained it," Angelina replied. I stood akimbo, hands on hips, and exactly how did you sprain it? Robert stepped forward. "It's my fault," he said. "Boy, you could have knocked me over with a feather when he said that." If he had hurt Angelina on purpose, he wouldn't admit it. He'd deny it or try to hide it, right? I didn't want to imagine that my daughter could be in an abusive relationship. Angelina and I were, well, it's hard to describe, but we were yelling and joking and tickling and stuff, and then I shoved her a little. It wasn't anything, just a tap on her shoulder. I didn't mean to hurt her, Robert insisted. He knelt in front of her then. "Angelina, baby doll, I'm so sorry. I didn't mean for it to happen that way. I guess I forget how strong I am sometimes, especially now that football season is over and I have all this pent-up energy. Look, tell me what you need, anything at all, and I'll get it for you. Ice, aspirin, what do you need?" Robert moved the coffee table closer to the couch and helped Angelina place her injured ankle on top of it. "Do you want an aspirin, non-aspirin, too?" Robert asked her. "Non-aspirin pain relievers would be great," she replied. "Not aspirin. This hurts too much for aspirin. There's medicine in the kitchen cupboard over the sink." While Robert stepped out of the room to get Angelina's medication, I whispered to her, "Tell me what really happened." She whispered back, "It happened exactly the way Robert said it did. We were playing, and he gave me this little tap on the shoulder, and for some reason I just lost my balance and fell wrong. It's my fault, Mom. I fell wrong. Don't blame Robert, please." It could have happened that way, I suppose, although it seemed awfully coincidental that within mere weeks Angelina had both broken her left wrist and sprained her right ankle. She'd never been injured before in her life. I didn't know what to do. Should I give Robert the benefit of the doubt? I had no proof that he was the one who'd hurt Angelina these two times, and I hadn't witnessed either accident or incident. He and Angelina had been alone together both times, and they presented a united front when it came to explaining what had happened. If I pushed matters, Angelina would think I didn't trust Robert or her. But if I ever did get proof that Robert was hurting her, I would go after him so fast his head would spin. Robert brought the water and pain relievers and handed them to Angelina with a kiss. Angelina lifted her face to his with a tender smile. Thanks, you take such good care of me, baby. The next day, she received 2 dozen long-stemmed red roses from Robert. Not long after her ankle and wrist had healed, Robert brought Angelina home from a Saturday night at the mall. They were both wearing black wraparound sunglasses like those that you sometimes see little old ladies wearing, except somehow the glasses looked way more stylish. They were joking about being Agent A and Agent B, and about the necessity of clearing classified information with one another. I figured they'd gone to some kind of mystery adventure movie at the mall's movie theater and then gone shopping for sunglasses. Wasn't that pretty typical silliness for teenagers? I prayed that this was a sign that things were going better between them, and they were laughing and having lots of fun together for what seemed like the first time in weeks or months. I didn't like the fact that I had felt anti-Robert ever since he'd begun to guard Angelina's free time so jealously and then had criticized her choice of clothing. I didn't like the fact either that I had wondered if he could have hurt her physically. When I saw him smiling and giggling together like this, I found it very easy to remember my first impression of seeing the two of them side by side. They really were a couple of cute kids. Even after Robert left, Angelina still refused to take off the sunglasses. "Okay, Angelina, you can stop playing your little game," I said. "That was between you and Robert, but this is you and me, and I'd like it if you could look directly into my eyes when we talk. Mom, do you have any idea how much these shades cost? I couldn't afford them with my own money." Momentarily, a thought went through my head. Gifts, extravagant gifts, a ruby and diamond ring, 2 dozen long-stemmed red roses, expensive designer glasses, at least 2 of the 3 given to Angelina after I had believed that Robert had hurt her. Was there a similar connection with the sunglasses? Were they all guilt gifts? I shook my head. No, 2 out of 3, and those 2 only suspected, was not a fair number of incidents on which to base a whole set of assumptions. I wasn't being fair to Robert or to Angelina. "Okay," I agreed. "If you won't take your sunglasses off, I'll put mine on." I went to my purse and put them on. "Oh, Mom," Angelina snickered, "you look so silly." "Don't call me Mom," I replied, getting into the act. "Call me Agent C." She looped an arm around my neck in an almost hug. "Hey, Agent C, do you have any idea how totally ridiculous you look?" I gave her a playful spank. "Just for that, Agent A, I'm going to send you to your room and tell you to go to bed." I sat up long after Angelina had finished taking off her makeup, washing her face, and brushing her teeth, long after she'd shut the door to her bedroom and turned out the light. I needed to think. I had a lot of feelings and impressions I needed to sort out. But I think that Robert was hurting Angelina, or did I, on purpose or not? If so, I ought to be doing a lot better job of protecting her. Then could it be I was feeling displaced because her boyfriend was now more important to her than I was? Could all Could all of my dislike and evil suspicions of Robert actually be due to the fact that I was jealous of him? Did they? I answered my own question by shaking my head. I'd never heard of such a thing before. Feeling peaceful and serene, at last I shut off the living room lights. The last thing I did, as I did every single night, was check on Angelina. Quietly, I turned the doorknob to her bedroom and let myself in and crept to her bedside. From the very beginning of her life, I'd always loved to watch my precious baby sleep. I bent down to gently brush a tendril of hair off her cheek. How adorable, I thought. I could recall having slept in the tutu I'd worn to dance in a ballet recital one time, the crown I'd worn at a beauty pageant another time. I was glad that Angelina had obviously enjoyed her evening with Robert. So much that she didn't want it to end. When I gazed down at her, I was shocked. I felt like I'd been sucker punched in the gut. It was a black eye she had, to be exact, and although the only thing which illuminated the bedroom then was moonlight streaming in through her sheer under curtains, I could clearly see the outline of a fist with the five knuckle marks being perhaps the darkest part of all of the bruise. I greeted Angelina the next morning at breakfast. She was wearing her old cheap pair of sunglasses. "Going somewhere?" I asked, "or is that classified information?" I chuckled wryly, finding it hard to keep the bitterness out of my voice. "But what am I saying? That's why Robert brought these big designer wraparounds for you, isn't it? To protect your eyes." Angelina sank into the chair across from me. "How did you know? I always kiss you goodnight after you fall asleep. Last night I noticed you were still wearing your new sunglasses, so I took them off for you. That's when I saw." "Oh," her voice was barely a whisper. "Since I know," I went on, "you don't need to hide from me anymore. Take off those old sunglasses, sweetie, and let Mom take a good look at that shiner." Seeing it in the moonlight had been bad enough, but seeing it now in the bright light of day was almost enough to make me throw up the coffee and toast I'd managed to choke down already that morning. "Robert did this to you." It was a statement, not a question. Slowly, Angelina nodded. "And it was Robert's doing, not a ski accident, which caused you to break your wrist." Again, she nodded. "And when you sprained your ankle, it wasn't because you fell wrong. It was because Robert slammed you down on the couch." Yet again, she nodded. Her eyes remained downcast. I placed my hand under her chin and forced her to raise her face to mine. Looking straight into her eyes, I told her, "Angelina, this is not your fault. You have nothing at all to feel guilty or ashamed about. Do you understand me?" She lifted her shoulders in a shaky little shrug, and tears filled her eyes. "I'll say it again. You have nothing to feel guilty or ashamed about." A single tear slipped down her cheek. "You aren't dealing with this alone anymore," I reassured her. She nodded and smiled weakly. "Now," I said, "the first thing we're going to do is have you call Robert and break up with him. Make it clear that you will not stay in a relationship with anyone who abuses you." "Mom, I'll stand right by your side while you talk to him." "But Mom, I can't." "Yes, you can. You don't understand. I won't break up with Robert. I still love him." "You what? Don't say that. Don't tell me that you love him so much you can't leave him." "I can't," she protested in an agonized whisper. "Yes, you can, and you will. Like it or not, you're going to call him and break up with him right now. this minute, and if I ever catch you near him again, I'm going to put bars on your bedroom window, then lock you in there and throw away the key. So help me God, I added, thinking that indeed I would need a lot more of the Lord's help in this matter before everything was taken care of for good. Angelina never mentioned Robert's name around me anymore, although I knew she saw him at school and spoke with him every chance she got. One afternoon when I was out on a sales call in the midst of convincing one of our firm's customers to make his largest purchase yet, my beeper went off. Excuse me. He nodded. Thank you. When I called the number on my beeper, a number I couldn't recall ever having seen before, a man who introduced herself as Nurse Jessie McNessum from the General Hospital told me that Angelina was in emergency. In shock, I apologized to a client, told him I'd have to reschedule at County General. As soon as I walked into the emergency waiting room, I identified myself as Crystal and identified myself. Nurse Magnedeshin escorted me back inside the ER. Angie, what happened? Angelina wouldn't reply, so I looked to the people behind her. I didn't recognize the gray-haired lady standing behind Angelina. Ursula, can you tell me what happened? The gray-haired lady placed a restraining hand on Ursula's arm. Maybe it would be best if I explained it. Thank you. Mrs. Snyder, your daughter was in the stairwell with Robert, her boyfriend. I suppose they believed they were alone. I turned to Angelina then. Robert has broken your arm now? Angelina turned her head away. Ursula stroked Angela's silky black curtain of hair. I walked around the gurney to where Ursula was standing and hugged her. Thank you, I repeated. I went around to the other side of the gurney. I will not let you continue to be victimized by Robert. Well, said Ursula. Well, what? I thought you said you'd help. Oh, I will. I'll do everything within my power to do that. The Sebastials will fight your accusations against Robert, and they're not easily defeated. Neither am I replied. As soon as Angelina's arm was wrapped in Mother's cast, I took her and Ursula to our apartment. The Sebastopols lived on a huge estate. I drove right up to the semicircle driveway. I could ring the doorbell. Deliveries go to the rear door, a man informed me. I'm not here to make a delivery. Well, we do not purchase from door-to-door salespeople. I told him I'm Crystal Needlin, the mother of Angelina. Really, he replied, this is quite an inopportune time. I know, I do hate to interrupt your evening plans. The butler still looked like he wanted to figure out a way to politely throw me out. It's quite all right, Johnson, Mrs. Sebastopol said. Let her into our home. After all, she is our dear Angelina's mama. Once I made it past Johnson, things began to go smoothly. I tried to explain this was not the typical social call. Finally, I had to stop them. I'm sorry, I said. You both seem like lovely people. Then, breaking the news to them as gently as I could, I explained to them about Angelina's visit to the ER. They listened in silence. When I finally finished talking, Mr. Sebastopol suddenly leapt to his feet. Perhaps I'd had better see Ms. Snyder to her car. When we got outside, she said, I apologize for my husband's outburst. A breeze blew over us then, and Teresa Sebastopol's silk scarf slipped out of its loose knot. Father and son are so devoted to one another. I see, I told her. I really did see. Like father, like son, Robert had clearly learned his abusive ways by observing how his father treated his mother. I got into my car and left. By the time I returned to our living room, Angelina's face was starting to turn blue. Robert would surely kill her if I didn't stop him with my gun. So carefully, since Angelina was locked in his lethal embrace, I aimed the gun at Robert's thigh and squeezed the trigger. After he went down and Angelina managed to regain her breath, I called an ambulance for both of them. If any good came out of this whole situation is that my daughter and I have grown closer to one another more than ever. I never stopped loving her, and that I was always on her side. That's why I'm sharing her story now. We talk all the time and share all of our thoughts and feelings. Okay, that's going to do it for this edition of the Romance Program. Thank you so much for listening. This has been Volunteer Genios for Sun Sounds. Have a great week. Take care. Bye-bye.